every 2 days in France, a robbery, an abduction happened. They stuffed his wife into the trunk of a car for 48 hours, and they took one of his fingers. Don't be an idiot such as ourselves. Don't be public about Bitcoin. Like, that is something that might bite us in the ass in the future. If, like, cash would be like a newly invented thing, they would not invent or like allow it to happen. We need to improve Bitcoin and make it as private and as scaled as possible before, you know, the government fully captures Bitcoin in one way or another. Satoshi left. That left. He left us all on our own terms, and now we have this great thing that he came up with, and we should not that up.
Curious too, because you mentioned scaling Bitcoin and privacy around Bitcoin, which sounds like changing Bitcoin. And I'd just like to ask, when did you become compromised?
If you truly believe Bitcoin needs to scale to 8 billion people and self-custody should be done by your grandma, then we need to improve Bitcoin just a little bit. Let's dig in, you know, let's end some careers.
Are we in the midst of the fourth turning, or do you stand by the Bugle thesis that we're actually already in the first turning? Where are you at with this?
So this would be my first turning that I presently observe, to quote Steve Lubka, be gentle. This is my first turning. I don't know what to expect. I'm just, I'm here for a good time, not a long time, you know. And I always quote my grandmother, she in French said, "Ce n'est pas une solution, pas de problème." If you don't worry about things that you cannot change, is essentially the essence of that. And I try to, take care of me and my family, and then what happens happens.
Yeah, it's a good mentality to have. Turns out it's like when push comes to shove, you realize what's really important. I've just had a bit of a health emergency recently.
Yeah, I saw that.
You just kind of realize oh my God, wow, almost none of the stuff I was worried about or was pissed off about matters at all. And so I've just cut so much shit out. Yes, am I posting fewer memes? And fewer trolls, sure. Is that a loss for the world? Perhaps, but not for me,
Yeah.
So it's all about that balance. But dude, I'm stoked to have you on here. People may know you as the moderately tall European guy who sells industrial grade washers with a 50x markup, for Bitcoin self-custody, CDOR. Yeah. I jest. But you do a lot more than that. You've got BitSurance now. You are quite a memetic savant, I would say, which again is always pleasantly surprising to see as a European, just that
Are we not known to be a funny people, us Germans? Is that something like a stereotype I'm unfamiliar with?
I actually didn't want to assume you're German. I thought maybe Scandinavian, just given the height. I wasn't sure if German, emotional repression had led to more stunted growth patterns, but clearly not. You've managed to break free of that, so that's fantastic. No, I jest, but you do post some dank memes, and they're very much appreciated. And we've got a bunch of stuff I want to cover with you today here, but I actually don't know your origin story with CDOR and Bitcoin. How did you end up? When was the point where you're like, here's the thing, guys, we're just going to throw a bunch of washers on a pipe and it's going to be a really efficient cold storage solution. By the way, our marketing strategy is just me making absurd memes and it's going to work. Because it has worked pretty darn well, I would say.
I absolutely agree. And that is the perfect encapsulation of how that happened. So, as is tradition, as a German person, I studied mechanical engineering and I worked in aerospace. And as a material scientist, I did some process simulation, but I'm not a proper coder. And luckily, I didn't go into coding because that is all useless now. But I thought about how can I contribute to Bitcoin, because I've been in this space for quite some time. I really enjoyed it. And I saw what, is at stake after of course, I entered the space by a number go up, and I was amazed by wow, you can get rich. And then I realized, oh, there's more to this. It's freedom technology. And probably I should, at least as a side project, help contribute, make this better. And like the only thing as a material scientist that I could do is come up with the best, you know, backup for your private keys. And then I looked at all these 74 different competitors and went to the hardware store and went to my CNC milling shop and created CDOR. And having no budget at all allocated for this, I just, you know, created a personal brand, or like a heavily doubled down on my meme skills that I've honed over, like, I don't know, over a decade on Reddit. On Reddit, it was important to be original. Like, you were not allowed to repost or like steal other people's content. You would have been shamed. Something that is like, you know, on Twitter, like everybody does, but like on Reddit, you have to like, oh, can't steal content. So I really like pride myself in only making original memes, and they are an acquired taste, I would say so. But enough people seem to like them, and it helped CDOR not only grow from a like side passion project, but into an actual Bitcoin job. So it pays my salary, it pays all my travel expenses if I go to a conference, and I enjoy time with friends on the company dime, and I can pay people a salary with CDOR, which is amazing if you think about it. At the same time, I also invested in a small startup called Bitsurance, where we, you know, again, deal with the topic of loss and the physical threats to Bitcoin, or rather to Bitcoin holders. And that's an insurance company that protects not your Bitcoin, but yourself in the event somebody robs you, threatens you or your family, and then asks for Bitcoin in the event that you are robbed, you can give the attacker the Bitcoin and you would be covered. So far, only available in Europe. But my good friends over at AnchorWatch, they do something very similar in America. And it is an entirely underserved market. And having observed this gap in coverage and being a mechanical engineer, as I always say, jack of all trades, master of none, I have like a good top view of things, and I can, you know, contribute a little bit to all of these things. And but I think Bitcoin memes are my icky guy. I continue to do them.
I want to get into the meme side of things a little bit too, but first I do want to say, I mean, it's good that you guys are providing this product in Europe, because I mean, in France alone, I don't know. I mean, I kind of know what's going on over there. I know there was somebody inside the government was like selling actually personal data and like basically working with the, I don't know if you call them gangs or whatever, Le Gang, or you know, something like that.
What like, with criminals. Yeah. So yeah,
like what was happening? Can you break that down? What was happening over there?
So in general, we've seen a very steep increase in $5 ransom attacks globally, but like the number one country they occur right now is France. And that has to do with the fact that the IRS equivalent in France, an employee there leaked not just crypto or Bitcoin holders' addresses, but wealthy people's addresses for as low as 800 euros a pop. And then it is not like regular like criminals, but like professional criminals. They are like masterminds in the behind scenes, and then they hire like hoodlums off Telegram to come visit you, and they then know, okay, this person is showing me a Decoy wallet, but given they obediently paid their taxes, I know they must have more, so you know, take a finger. And there has been increasing number of these events, so much so that like just this year alone, every 2 days in France, a robbery, an abduction happened. Like Jameson Love keeps tracking them, and he only has public sources, and he recently had to redact some of them because like, or not, he had to correct them because he said, oh, I only reported on 37, but so far it has been almost 50. The official police reports came out because if you are in such an robbery or abduction event, like you're not necessarily talking to the media to have additional like press coverage, and afterwards like the police crime statistics, they associate in crypto with that specific crime. And so I always say like that the best insurance for that is to tell nobody about your Bitcoin or that you have Bitcoin. Don't go flaunting wealth. The second best thing is to have some kind of, you know, $5 wrench insurance that would give you a bargaining chip in the event somebody comes and robs you. There's kidnap and ransom insurance. There is like BitSurance where we can, you know, you can say, here's 100,000 euros, 500,000 euros worth of Bitcoin. Be gone. Go with God. And in the end, you know, like you save your skin and hopefully you get the Bitcoin replaced or your fiat to buy Bitcoin again. But these things, you know, they're on the rise and it's just, it just makes sense because it is this perfect asset that can be transferred under coercion and there is no like undo button. Like there was this very famous case like 1.5 years ago with the co-founder of Ledger. He was abducted in Vierzon and like he's no longer with the company, but he's like a 100 millionaire and he took some innocent pictures of his new house. And that was enough for the criminal gangs to find him and they abducted him. They asked for 20 million euros in Bitcoin. They stuffed his wife into the trunk of a car for 48 hours and they took one of his fingers. And that is a guy who had like a special team taking care of his security. He had all these kinds of training in that kind of situation. And there was a very smart negotiator, apparently, who managed to convince the criminals, instead of taking Bitcoin, to take Tether, which was then instantly frozen, which is kind of, you know, like you're getting that far, and then you take Tether, come on. And yeah, I mean, and like he was luckily liberated on a pure coincidence. Like there was a police officer who noticed a report coming in of a invalid or stolen license plate seen nearby a hotel or something. And that's why they then found and rescued him and later found his wife in the trunk of a car. But like that scenario, that is insane. But Bitcoin is an asset that, you know, did 100x from 2017 and people go around flaunting their wealth and don't think they can be a target. And, you know, people need to step up their OPSEC.
No, it's very true, and it's sadly in Europe you guys don't have guns, which makes things
that is a misconception. we have all of the guns, and I would even say, like except for weapons of war, which would probably also be quite difficult to get, maybe outside of Tennessee, but like we can have guns. That's no problem. Like we don't have these open carry licenses unless you're like a licensed investigator or something, but home defense like with guns is possible, but yeah, the best defense is a good security strategy and like to not let it get that far. But yeah, I mean, there have been cases in America as well, like in New York they had a guy abducted in like for like several days and they tortured him, and very, very gruesome cases, because it's just, you know, information that can be beat out of you. And then there's this report by guard.io, a company by Elena of Satoshi Labs and Max formerly Wasabi. They looked at all the reported cases, and what I've heard, like a lot of feedback that I've gotten due to all these $5 range attacks, is it actually smart to have your Bitcoin in self-custody? Should I not have it on an exchange? And like that report flat out showed us that it doesn't make a difference whether it's on an exchange or self-custody. Either you log into your Coinbase account or you have to unlock your hardware signer. There are ways with like time lock, multisig, etc. to protect you, or rather protect your Bitcoin, but not to protect your like your health, I would say. And yeah, it's again, the perfect asset, and that comes with a lot of downsides too.
It's an interesting point on the, let's say, the multi-sig front, because like, you know, like without getting into details, like there's no way that I can I can't do anything with my Bitcoin, you know, if I'm at my house, and I can't even do it in the country. Like there are, you know, are multiple geographic redundancies, and like the difficulty there is that some people may be too, your attacker may be too stupid to understand that, like, look, like I'm telling you, I can't access my, like, it's literally impossible for me to do anything. They'll be like, okay, we'll take another finger. Then we'll see. Then we'll see if you can access those Bitty coins. And you're like, no, I'm telling you, don't understand. It's multi-sig. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Miniscript.
I have this very mimetic slide in my presentation of this guy next to a whiteboard frantically explaining, like, oh, it's geographically distributed. I cannot access right now. Like, the hoodlum that is hired, he does not care. Like, you will have to give up something if it is a kidney or something else. So in that event, it is probably smart to have a decoy wallet or, like, an old ledger that you can give out with some sum that seems plausible, at least. So make it worth their time. And then, yeah, don't, I'm not touting my own horn, but insurance, you know, can be a part of that. But I don't want to lose the last Nostra life. We should probably stop talking about insurance now.
No. I mean, I think the operational security side is like a really, really important thing for people to pay attention to, because it's also a function of like, okay, you may not think that you have a lot of wealth right now, but fast forward, you know, if Bitcoin does what we all believe it is going to do and what it has done historically, like, yeah, you know, I like, if you're like me and, you know, you only got into Bitcoin a few years ago and you're like, okay, yeah, it's not like I'm a big whale, you know, like, why would anybody target me? Well, in the future, anybody who's buying right now in 20, you know, if you go to 2035, if you were buying in 2025, people are going to be like, or 2026, people are going to be like, oh my God, they must have, you know, a bajillion trillion dollars in Bitcoin. Like, it's all just like a game of time, right? And so I think being better prepared in the present just is a prudent choice for people. Like, you should be paying attention to these things. You should be careful. You also got to be just like, yeah, careful about what you post more broadly, because you, especially with AI, it's so much easier to geolocate these days too. Like, you can do it trivially easy. And so people, like, you know, you should be conscious of that, right? Wish you could access cash without selling your Bitcoin? Ledin makes that possible. And the global leader in Bitcoin-backed lending, Ledin, has introduced their lowest rates ever. No complexity, no fine print. The larger the loan, the lower the rate. These new rates apply to all new loans, refinances, and renewals. You'll see the rates up front before you apply. The new lower rates come with Ledin's gold standard protection. Your Bitcoin remains custodied and is never lent out for interest. Perfect 8-year track record of keeping clients' assets safe, auto top-up, LTV alerts, and partial repayments to keep you in control. Repay whenever you want with zero penalties or monthly payments. Ledin's perfect $10 billion-plus track record through every market cycle in the last 8 years speaks for itself. Don't choose between a great rate and the safety of your Bitcoin. Get both at Ledin. Check out your rate by using their loan calculator at ledin.io/walker. That's ledin.io/walker. If you're hodling Bitcoin personally or for a business, here's the uncomfortable truth. You probably don't have insurance. Most policies exclude Bitcoin, and the ones that don't, they only pay you back in fiat. What's the point of that if you need to claim a loss when number go up? That's not insurance, that's liquidation. Now there's another option, BDIC. They're building an insurance marketplace on the Bitcoin standard. One Bitcoin lost equals one Bitcoin paid. They've integrated with Liana Business for enterprise self-custody, with personal wallet coverage options coming later this year. If you care about protecting your Bitcoin as Bitcoin, sign up for the waitlist at bdic.io/walker. That's bdic.io/walker. Insurance on the Bitcoin standard. Blockstream Jade Plus delivers robust security with fully open source hardware and software. Its unique genuine check feature ensures your device is authentic, giving you ultimate peace of mind. With versatile connectivity options, including Bluetooth, USB-C, built-in camera, and SD card, Jade Plus offers unparalleled flexibility in managing your Bitcoin. Whether you prefer wireless convenience or air-gapped security, Jade has you covered. Its innovative design features a durable metal case, a bright 1.9-inch color screen, and intuitive navigation buttons that make managing your Bitcoin straightforward and enjoyable. Jade Plus also supports secure, air-gapped transactions via QR code signing using the Jade Link storage device, keeping your Bitcoin safe without compromising convenience. Visit store.blockstream.com and use my coupon code WALKER for an exclusive 10% discount on your Blockstream Jade Plus. Protect your Bitcoin, sleep better, stack harder.
Yeah, I mean, like, everything becomes much more accessible through AI, like deception, social engineering, like voice models, video fakes, all these things. Yeah, be vigilant and, like, don't be an idiot such as ourselves. Don't be public about Bitcoin. Like, that is something that might bite us in the ass in the future, because even, like, 17 years in, everybody that gets into Bitcoin now is, in my opinion, very, very early to this. And yeah, no price prediction, but nominally, I would bet my ass that we will see an increase at an all-time high in your time. Like, and all these things, like, correlate very closely. Like, these $5 range attacks correlate really closely with the price. And yeah, there's don't trust. Yeah, verify, I would say, and don't count on other people helping you in that case. Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of things that AI enables, AI has enabled you to post previously unimaginable levels of mimetic slop. But it's unfair to call it slop because you have quite a gift for mimetics, I think. And I'm curious too. Do you think the vibes right? The vibes have been weird for a while. Like, but from my limited time in Bitcoin, like, I was around for the 2022 bear, and like that was like the memes were the best during that time. The memes were bad because all, you know, all the quote tourists or whatever, the lettuce hands got out, and it was just a lot of people who became really hardcore Bitcoiners or already were, but or were forged in the fires of the bear market, and then decided to just start using memes as their outlet for frustration, for hope, for whatever it might be, for dunking on Greenpeace. That, you know, like Carl and I, that was when we really started like going hard into making our videos, was in the depths of that bear market. And I'm curious if you think right now the memes feel bear market-ish or bull market-ish. Does that make sense?
I mean, they feel very institutional-ish. Like, currently, Bitcoin is captured by a ton of institutions. And every other week, there is a new synthetic derivative that, you know, promises yield. It is, I agree, like, it is different. Like, I remember the Reddit days. I remember early Bitcoin Twitter days. And, like, I try to keep this kind of spirit alive by memeing as much as my time permits. Luckily I'm not alone, but it feels, I agree, it feels different this time. I guess everything is different this time. But yeah.
What's the best meme? Not one that you posted. What's the best meme that you've seen recently?
So I promise to not say this publicly, but like there is a person that I think is the better memer than I am, and I like, it's my guilty pleasure to see these memes. He works at BTC Inc. Dan Webb, Heartland Bitcoin. He does some other things under pseudonym too. But like, there are so many of these memes that are like hyper targeted into my center of humor. Difficult to pick a favorite. It's like Sophie's Choice. Like, if you ask what is my favorite meme that I made, it's always my last one. You always need to be better. You can always improve. Usually there is no correlation between how well a meme performs and how much of a great meme I think it is. Like, there's absolutely, or how much effort I put into it. Like, there's no proof of work that is associated with like performance. Like, I've done, I don't know, hour long CapCut edits on my phone, and that they hardly made like 12 likes, and I pooped out like a meme quickly, and usually it's a Michael Saylor meme and that's like 1,000 likes, and then I'm like, all right, okay, give the people what they want.
It is funny, I've noticed, and I think anybody who's done any sort of content creation has noticed that too, that it's like, and maybe it's the fact that when you pour so much time into something, perhaps it ends up getting too in the weeds, or it's, you know, it becomes too complex. I don't know, but like, this was always a frustration for Carl and I when we were making our crypto couple videos, was like, you know, it'd be like multiple days of, you know, of script writing, of filming, you know, then she's like, you know, she's editing, she's getting, you know, within a centimeter, I'm saying this for the, you know, for your European mind, centimeters, not inches, a centimeter of the computer screen, and you know, for multiple days, and so much thought and care goes into it. and you post it, like, it does pretty well. But then, you know, if she was to just, like, post a picture of like, her foot holding a Bitcoin, it would, you know, that's, like, 5,000 likes, you know. But maybe that would be for other reasons. I'm not sure. She hasn't done that, but maybe she should start.
From this economy.
I know. It is interesting. You mentioned kind of the institutionalization of Bitcoin. Do you think that that is what's happening, or do you think it's like who's trapped in the room with whom? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is Bitcoin trapped in the room with the institutions, or are the institutions trapped in the room with Bitcoin?
I mean, I would say every bear market in the past has seen some kind of, you know, sacrificial lamb, something that, you know, needs to blow up, something needs to unwind, something needs to, you know, crater, and like it has to get worse before it gets better. Like we have to go deeper into the crevasse, and then, you know, we will see the light eventually. And at that point, we will see like who is wearing pants and who is not. Like if the tide goes out. So I'm holding judgment on that. But yeah, I mean, some of those AI memes Michael Saylor posts, like I die inside like when I see like the earnings calls and like people are AI dancing and like, oh my god, send it to zero. Like this, I try to,
I'll take the other side on that though, because I did hear him talk about once. He was like, Strategy basically got rid of like a ton of their market. This was like previously, I think with STRC, they've probably poured a lot of marketing money into that, obviously. But prior to that, they basically like got rid of most of their marketing budget at Strategy for a long period of time. And there's that, I'm forgetting what there was a particular account Saylor was reposting a lot, or like tweeting the guy. I'm forgetting.
Ladoja? Yeah.
Yeah. There. Thank you. And I'm pretty sure they just like brought that guy on, like paid him a fat salary, and like, you know, cut their marketing budget by like 95%. They're like, okay, you just make these Saylor AI, you know, pictures, Michael repost them. They get more visibility than any of our other marketing stuff. So, hey, let's do that. But it is interesting. I guess it speaks to the changing dynamics around marketing, around propaganda more broadly, like, cause there's good propaganda and bad propaganda, right? Like not all propaganda is bad. All that we do with memetics is propaganda, right? And it's about
propaganda
propagating that propaganda.
Propaganda is good, you know, confirming our biases, yeah.
Exactly. but even like, I don't know if you've seen this as like a U.S. politician thing, but he's blown up a lot on X, so maybe it's come across your radar, but this Spencer Pratt in L.A., this guy, who was like previously a reality TV guy, and he's just like his, you know, AI video, like campaign videos have just been just fantastic, you know, like really fantastic stuff. But we're entering this sort of new world where it's like, you don't have to spend $10 million on political ads to have the same impact. Like you can have the same impact with a guy buying, you know, a couple hundred bucks worth of, you know, of image generation and video generation tokens versus a budget of a couple million and a massive team and this whole market. And like the AI slop may reach more people and be more effective. And I feel like that's like, the old world is not ready for that yet. Like boomers will see like Jesus Christ riding a unicorn on Facebook and be like, I can't, who was able to get this image? This is incredible. Yes. Like, where was this photo taken? You know, no natural defenses.
Boomers getting one-shotted on Facebook is like kind of a poetic justice, I think. Like, you know, you got to buy your house cheap. Now you get like your wallet drained by like some really, really bad AI slop. that is kind of poetic. But yeah, I would underwrite that. Like AI is like the cold, like the great equalizer. It does not have to be slop. Like I've seen wonderful art, wonderful campaigns made on a very teeny tiny budget, and you would not know it. At the same time, you see slop, but I don't think the amount of slop has, I mean, it probably has increased, but like not necessarily due to AI, just because, you know, people don't have taste. If you have taste, like the world is your oyster right now. And I've seen developers who were not able to design build something themselves now, and the same vice versa, designers who did not know how to code make their ideas now into reality. And I myself, like, I initially wanted to make my parents not proud and not become a mechanical engineer. I wanted to go into movie making. I wanted to become a cinematographer. And I always, like, I've written as a passion project. I've written screenplays and like I've written movies and television show screenplays, and like five people have read them. And now I think we are getting to the point. Maybe there will be a Chris production like in the near future, even if it's just a short movie, because now, you know, there is nothing that you can lose. And there is just, you know, you spend some time, some credits, and maybe your idea, you know, connects with people, and then you can make it properly. But these kind of tools are, they arrive just at the right time, I think.
Yeah. I mean, even podcasters can, you don't even have to be a designer or a developer or a mechanical engineer. Like Peter McCormick had posted just recently, he was like, you know, I basically was using Claude, and what would have cost me a couple hundred thousand pounds previously, because I've done this same thing before and like had to pay for it. Like I did it, you know, for negligible cost and just me, and it's of high quality and it works. And like, it, you know, it is really being able to just do something, like, you know, you can just build things, right? And you can just do things. But prior to this, it was very difficult for a non-technical person, for a non-developer, to build any sort of software, because you needed to bring in developers. You needed to pay them a lot of money. Or if you're building a company, you need to give them a substantial portion of equity, since they're going to be doing a large part of the work. Now you have this ability to just build things yourself. And that's not to say that really great developers are irrelevant. I think they're even more relevant, because they become, you know, as much as AI makes the non-technical person able to do things they never could before, I think it also makes the highly technical person, the highly skilled person, it turns them into like a superhuman, right? Like they, because they actually know how all this stuff works, they're going to be able to do so much more with a greater depth than, you know, you or I. Certainly more than me. I can't speak to you, but you know,
if you look at Kali, like that guy, like I don't know when he sleeps, like he has five different projects and tweets five times a minute. That is so impressive. And like, don't roll your own crypto, and don't vibe code a wallet is what I would say. Like stick to, you know, proper security hardened premises. But like all the other things, like the things that, you know, make your life more efficient, and you know, the day-to-day things that then, you know, can be freed up if you know and how, like, have a healthy use for AI. But yeah, I'm surprised that Peter McCormick, you know, jumped on that train. Instead of, you know, asking him what's an expert, we should ask him what's a markdown file or something. Like, we need to update the meme on that.
Yeah, that's a good meme. Look at this. This is a brainstorming session. No, I think Peter is not a dummy. He just plays one on TV. You know, it's all part of his charming act. You know,
he is quite cunning and he is curious. That is his superpower. He's curious and he knows how to ask a question. I always say, like, when he interviews Lynn Alden, I'm the grog brain listening, and then I just telepathically, you know, I would ask this question because I'm dumb, and then suddenly, like, Peter comes out with the exact same question. Like, he's a wonderful interviewer. So nothing but love, Peter.
Yeah, no, nobody ever did it quite like him, and he still continues to do it.
Rest in peace.
It's interesting too. I think his pivot was very successful. Initially, I was like, oh, sweet, I'm going to fill the vacuum. Peter is leaving. And then Danny comes in. And he's like, well, look at me. I'm doing what Bitcoin did again, in it, you know? No,
did you just give Danny an Australian a British accent?
Yeah, okay. My Australian accent isn't as good. Neither is my
British
American
accent. Mind.
But yeah, they're one's a penal colony of the other. It's basically the same thing. But no, I think it is interesting. I'm curious, too. In the realm of memetics, and what made me think of this is Peter kind of pivoting to not just being a Bitcoin podcast, but being like, it's a politics, it's a current events, it's a culture. He very much leaned into politics, obviously, because there's things going on in the UK that require the hero, you know, of Peter McCormick to put on his Batman cape and go save them. But I'm curious how much you think a kind of Bitcoin only, or let's say Bitcoin specific content, continues to be this viable niche versus how much it is actually beneficial for Bitcoin to have more branching out like that, to have, you know, as Peter says, like Bitcoin is still the heartbeat of this show. He still brings it up, but it's not what he leads with. You know what I mean? So you're, it's kind of the, maybe the foot in the door versus door in the face. Like you're starting off, you're not even mentioning it, you know, and then you come around to Bitcoin later as a logical conclusion. But I'd be curious to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, he sold the top quite well. Like he figured out, like, I mean, like the Trojan horse, like he has this like star prowess. He gets a lot of really important guests that would otherwise not come on a Bitcoin podcast. And it's probably growing the space much further than a circle jerk Bitcoin only podcast. Not that I don't love them, but
feels personal. Like,
every if you dig long enough into every problem that society has, you inevitably end at like corrupted money, and Bitcoin is the answer to that. And by the Socratic method of maieutic, like you can lead people to the solution without having to spell it out for them. And I think he does that quite well. And I think it was a really smart play of his. And then you see like other podcasters or like content producers or like entire teams like BTC Sessions now moving to sovereign sessions, which is very important because like with AI, everything becomes easier. So becomes surveillance. So becomes all these things that we are like out of convenience. We use all these Google and Facebook and whatever tools, or some of us do. And it is important to broaden the horizon. And if you create this content, like you can, don't have to lead with Bitcoin. Bitcoin inevitably becomes part of the conversation and you reach people. I think it's smart, but I'm not saying you should change the name of your podcast.
Is mine too on the nose? Is that what you're getting at here? The Bitcoin podcast is a little bit too specific.
Bitcoin podcast. I'm not, okay.
Yeah. It goes by many names, by many names. No, it's a good point, and I think that is basically the conclusion that every Bitcoiner comes to when you go deep enough down the rabbit hole, right, is that kind of all roads lead to Bitcoin. Some just take more meandering paths to get there. And I do think it's interesting too. It's from my own experience. Again, I have not experienced that many cycles, you know, now. But from the recent, let's say recent price action, you know, like fuck the cycles, like let's just assume they don't exist. But just speaking in near terms, it has felt like there hasn't been, let's say, a new class of Bitcoiners. Do you know what I mean? Like where it's like there wasn't a massive retail influx. Maybe I just missed it. Maybe that new class appeared in different ways. Maybe it appeared in the treasury companies. Maybe it appeared passively buying ETFs. I don't know.
The suit coiner is the new class that is here probably to stay. That the suit coiner is not interested in the privacy or in the freedom aspect of it. They are interested in the scarce properties of Bitcoin, and that is fine. Does not interest me that much, like leverage yields and whatever. I wouldn't say they need to be fought, but I would say they can be wholeheartedly ignored during discussions about Bitcoin policy or Relay or whatever. Like we need to definitely, in my opinion, improve Bitcoin and make it as private and as scaled as possible before, you know, the government fully captures Bitcoin in one way or another. I think the new class is the suit coiner.
And that's an interesting perspective there. I'm curious too, because you mentioned scaling Bitcoin and privacy around Bitcoin, which sounds like changing Bitcoin. And I'd just like to ask, when did you become compromised?
So
when did you first notice you were compromised?
Yeah, when Luke Dasher sent the FBI after me. No, so I've always, first off, security is a moving target. So everybody who says Bitcoin can ossify does not know fuck from shit. And it will always have to have security vulnerability updates. And we will, it probably won't be quantum, but like there will be some upgrade in security, because even classical computers improve vastly, maybe not during my lifetime, but again, 4 decades from now. So we should very prudently, very conservatively, very well debated, talk about improvements, and there are very many improvements to Bitcoin. Some of them are more urgent and necessary. Currently, we're discussing BIP54. There are four known vulnerabilities in Bitcoin as of right now, like a miner with sufficient hash rate could mine all of the rest of Bitcoin within 2 weeks. And all these things can be patched, and we should do that, not just to prove that we can still soft fork Bitcoin. Then there are proposals like CTV or template hash, French CTV, that would make Bitcoin far better in many regards. It would be able to scale Lightning. It would be better for Bitcoin itself custody. We would have reactive security instead of proactive security. We could have much easier self-custody, meaning more people would not rely on Clownbase or Bitfinex or all these exchanges as they are right now, because not many people use Lightning in a self-custodial way. Not many people use Bitcoin in a self-custodial way. And if we did just that, like Jeremy Rubin proposed it like 10 years ago, I think, like 2015, 16, CTV, it has been well vetted. There is no bug in there. We could just, you know, push that, immediately scale Lightning, immediately make Bitcoin much, much more secure. And suddenly we would see more on-chain activity, pricing out all of the spam that some people worry so much about, and actually use Bitcoin as intended, as peer-to-peer and not peer-to-exchange-to-peer.
I would just check to mempool.space. Medium priority is 1 sat per V-byte.
Yes.
Low priority, 0.8 sat per V-byte. High priority, 2 sats per V-byte, which is great. So if you need to do some moving some Bitcoin on chain, you know, boy, it's been now's a good time, and it's been a very good time for quite a while. It's been
insanely
incredible.
Underpriced, but the free market gets to decide that price, and currently it's valued at less than 1 sat per V-byte, which is sad because that allows spammers to put idiotic spam on there. And if more people were excited about Bitcoin and would use it in a self-custodial way, that would not be the case. So that's why I think Bitcoin, you know, who said it? Was it Paul Storz? Not to endorse Paul Storz, but he said like Bitcoin developers lost 40 IQ points during the block size wars. they became too scared to ever, you know, champion another soft fork. And we have been, you know, yeah, lost our way in that regard. So I hope in the near-term future we see BIP54, we see a variant of a covenant proposal, whether it is CTV, CSFS, or a TX hash or template hash. All of these would be fine, in my opinion, but don't take my word for it. Don't trust, verify, have your own opinion. The materials are out there. I just think if you truly believe Bitcoin needs to scale to 8 billion people, and self-custody should be done by your grandma, then we need to improve Bitcoin just a little bit, you know.
It's interesting because I think you and Luke are actually in full agreement on that. He's literally said ossification to ossification
to
is death. he's said exactly that. Like, you can just search ossify or ossification on his X feed, and you'll find he's very clear about that. He thinks that if Bitcoin ossifies, it is dead. It's interesting that many adherents have the opposite position.
If I relapse on my very excellent time management and I go back on Twitter and argue with Knot's supporters, a surprising amount are vehemently against CTV. First of all, because likely they do not understand the implications. But they're not aware that like Death and Ohm and Griskita and Luke Dashier and all of these people are very big proponents of that. And Luke Dashier, despite our disagreements, like he wants what's best for Bitcoin from his point of view. Where I disagree with him, like Luke Dashier thinks Bitcoin is his project. So, you know, there are some difference of opinion there. But yeah, on that regard, like I can find common ground with most everybody, even Michael Saylor. So, you know, that is the message that you can take away from this. Like, instead of looking, you know, to differentiate you from one another, find the common things and ignore the rest. And then you will realize we probably get much further in this community if we, you know, focus on what we have in common.
I mean, I completely agree with that. And that's the thing. At the end of the day, it's like there are different flavors of Bitcoiners and many, many different opinions about what should or shouldn't be done with Bitcoin, what needs to be done to save or to not save Bitcoin, who is a good actor, who is a bad actor, who is compromised, who is the knight in shining armor. And that's fine. And I think that that's ultimately good. I truly agree with you that the important thing is remembering that I like to assume, at least, and perhaps this is a, you know, a naive assumption, but I will assume good intent if I have the, you know, the evidence to show that the intent is good, that the person's coming from a place of genuinely wanting to do what's best by Bitcoin, which I believe that Luke absolutely is. And I think, you know, certainly everybody, I've tried not to talk about, I haven't talked about, you know, that whole side of things.
Let's end some.
Oh, I don't know. I don't even know.
Cannot wait for them to fork off in August. Hopefully they will wake up,
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think that, well, this brings me to something I wanted to ask you about, which is everybody has a different opinion about what is the biggest threat to Bitcoin. Some people may say it's, you know, spam on the blockchain. Some people may say it's a nation state level type co-option. Others may say it's centralization of coins in the hands of corporations. Others may say it's failure to ossify, that if we, you know, if we, or you know, failure to ossify. Others say that it's, if we don't ossify it, or if we do ossify, it's death. You know, like, so many different perspectives. What do you actually think is, you know, you mentioned privacy, you mentioned scaling, you mentioned, you know, some of these BIPs. What do you think is the biggest actual threat to Bitcoin at this time?
Yeah, so let's go through this like one by one. You mentioned large single institutional holders. I don't think there's a threat there. If Michael Saylor is not taking his coins into self-custody, first off, they're not just his coins. They're like hundreds of thousands of investors' coins. Like, it's not just MicroStrategy, but like there's people or investment funds behind this. Maybe, you know, it will be seized by the government, and that will be like the budget neutral American Bitcoin reserve, which would be nice for you. I'd be happy for you. But I don't think that is a threat. The game theory works such as, you know, who's the most greedy protects the network the most. And he's doing that quite well. Nation state attacks, they can be a thing in the sense, you know, like, oh, we could do some secret mining. We could do some supply chain attacks. These things need to be watched out for. The thing that I fear the most, like, there are two things, like at the social layer. So there is this famous video. It's called Operation Orchestra. Everybody should watch it. I'll send you the link. It's by Paul Kemp. He came up, by the way, with a phrase of bike shedding, like he coined that term. But that is a way where like open source projects are subverted by NSA actors or like Secret Service people that, you know, then without doing it overtly sabotage a project from the inside. So again, with open source code, everybody says don't trust, verify. You and I, we probably can't read code, so we have to trust. We have to trust other people, and we need more code review, and we need more developers, and we need more people that are at that level that is adequate for this many trillion dollar asset. And we have a few of these. Like, there's 40 people, I would say, that are on that level. And what has been demonstrated the last 1.5 years, that is the second point, a lot of people have been violently attacked and smeared, and their private and social lives have been scrutinized. And people that led a private life, you know, have been, again, attacked for like insane reasons, up to the point where they then called quits and then like left the project. And having to replace these, I think, That has done the largest or the biggest amount of damage to Bitcoin as the project. Like just recently with Gloria Zhao, like having a developer of that nature, like she was great. She worked relentlessly. She had so many contributions. She was so good that even Luke Dasher recommended her for maintainership. And then she merged one single line of code that she didn't write, that others reviewed, her peers reviewed and marked up for it's ready to be committed. And she merged it. And that was then enough for quacks and people with a, you know, very sorry life to smear her. And that led to her like quitting the project, which again, like find somebody else like that. You won't be able to find somebody like one in a million. And that is, I think, the biggest threat that we face right now. And one way you can like help ameliorate that is fund people. Be generous with your stack if you are early to Bitcoin, or if you're not that early, but like everybody can donate some amount of Bitcoin to either one of the organizations that distribute this fairly or directly to a developer to help them, to encourage them. To give feedback on their work, actual feedback, not just brigading on GitHub. You know, speak words of encouragement that can be privately, that can be like openly. And to like a single message can help somebody from burning out. And that is, I think, what we saw the last 1.5 years or so, that the community, you know, is not as grateful as they should be about the people that help Bitcoin what it is today. Because Satoshi left. That motherfucker left. He left us all on our own terms. And now we have this great thing that he came up with. And we should not fuck that up. And I think we need constant development and we need the best developers. And so we should not scare them away.
So you don't think quantum is the biggest threat to Bitcoin?
So quantum, again, I'm just a dumb engineer. I'm not a quantum physicist. I talked to very smart quantum physicists. So like we as Europoors in Austria, in Innsbruck, we have one of the world's leading quantum laboratories. And I've talked to them like early as 2022, 2023, because we had a Bitcoin conference in that town. And I've been keeping up with their progress, and I've been, again, from a scientific mind, you know, I used to be a researcher. I try to grok these things, and AI, of course, helps me with that. But from my understanding and from the people that I respect and have talked to, it is far from an urgent threat. And as an engineer, I'm missing quantifiable data points to even extrapolate anything from that. There are all these charts. My good dear friend Nick Carter puts out these charts, and he has this wonderful vehicle that recently gave out a one Bitcoin prize for somebody who submitted a random number generator, which, you know, it's a good use of your money. And like they say, like by 2030, like ECDSA will be broken, and 256 or 128 bit keys will be broken, which I think is some gobbledygook. Cryptography is always on the side of the weaker people, and we already, with a lot of really smart people like Jonas Nick or Ethan Heilman, like we are working on defense, and it's much, much easier to defend yourself, I always say, like against a nuke than to build a nuke. And like we already have post-quantum signatures of a certain size. They could be implemented, but they would cuck the chain right now. We would have to do a block increase, and we know how that is like going down. But we continue to work on that, and it is, I think, correct. And I wouldn't say it's due to Nick Carter, because we've been doing it for like years prior. Like there's Presidio Bitcoin Conference, and all these people have been working on that. Like we should pay attention to it, and we should have a plan, Mike Schmidt said, in the bullpen, in the event there is a canary that, you know, shows us, hey, quantum is not just fake. But we have so many more urgent problems facing Bitcoin, I would say, that we should not focus all of our developers' time on that, and we should not be crying wolf. And I'm very confident sooner or later we will find a PQ signature as small as Nick Carter, and then we'll save, you know.
You know, it's interesting too in the quantum thing, because if anything, I hope that if people have been paying attention to this, one of the things that they've taken away from it is just the practical tip that what's one of the best ways to make sure that you're are going to be quantum safe? Well, just don't reuse addresses like that. You know, just don't reuse your address, which you shouldn't be doing anyway. Like that's a good bit of advice anyway. That's a best practice you should already be practicing, is don't reuse addresses. And that basically mitigates, you know, the vast majority of even the, longer tail risk on these things, yeah. Which I think is like, and it's like, hey, that's something you can do literally right now. And nobody has to do it for you. You can just go ahead and do that. Obviously, the question is Satoshi's coins and all that. Yes. Yeah. But like, so for you as a person.
Yeah. There is this maybe benefit of this quantum panic, the biggest people messing this up with address reuse are exchanges. Like, we should bully more exchanges into not reusing addresses. There's no reason to do that. And again, like the short range attack of like attacking a transaction in the mempool when like the public key is revealed, like that is so far out there, and like most quantum computer types like are not capable of doing that. Like those neutral atom quantum computers, they can't do a 9-minute attack. Having said that, I think the actual quantum debate won't be about actual PQ mitigation. It will be way earlier than that. There will be a class of Bitcoiners afraid of quantum and they want to act now, and others who are not afraid, and then there will be like a split, and then the discussion will come, you know, what to do with Satoshi's coins. That is like the only like foreseeable actionable thing that I see right now. And I believe there will be a futures market somewhere, as we had with SegWit 2x or something, and then the free market gets to decide. And I believe Bitcoin's promise is immutability, and it's permissionless, and property rights need to be respected. And Satoshi had any amount of time or any chance to like burn those Bitcoins if he actually wanted to show us that he's not just LARPing and he wants to never move them. Like he could have known that sending it to an op return would forever make them unspendable, and it would have saved us a lot of headaches. But maybe the game theory of Bitcoin is so strong that it just mutates, that in the end, the biggest holders like Coinbase or BlackRock or Michael Saylor, again, also just Coinbase, they're incentivized to protect their bag. And so they, after nation states like got their quantum computer, they will not play their hand. They will, you know, crack encryption of like Chinese governments or whatever. They will not go after Bitcoin and say, hey, by the way, like we have this thing and we can like read all your communications. The next people who will have a quantum computer will be like private companies. They will be very expensive. They will be very slow. And the largest holders want to protect their bags, and they will go out hunting. And Satoshi's Bitcoin are, I believe, on 22,000 individual P2PK addresses. And then you have to expand capital, and you have to reclaim those Bitcoin, and then maybe you have to sell some of them, and then you can put some of them into your balance. And because you want to protect your investment, you maybe, you know, do this transaction and add an op return signifying, hey, by the way, Coinbase, it's us. We are not dumping it, we're putting into our balance. And that sounds strikingly similar to mining. And that is the future that I envision, that, you know, there will be mining and there will be like a security budget upgrade, just in a different way with post-quantum. But again, that is way, way, way out.
That's a really interesting way to think about it, that it's almost this new form of, you know, mining or treasure hunting, you know, that kind of develops out of this. So it's safe to say you're not a fan of some of the, even like the rate limiting, you know, kind of, let's say, the hybrid approaches, because there's obviously like the full, like, freeze them, you know, freeze it. Anything that's in one of these addresses, not just Satoshi's coins, but any coins, freeze them. Then there's like the kind of BIP 360, the rate limiting side of things. There's various proposals on how, or various kind of sub proposals on how to do that. You're saying just like the kind of like do nothing. If it happens, okay, it happens. We haven't changed the core premise of Bitcoin in such a way that it would be ultimately like invalidating of the Bitcoin thesis by taking one of these actions that subverts one's property rights within Bitcoin.
Yeah, so I would think it would do greater damage to Bitcoin to change the property rights proposal or the promise than to like have Bitcoin move. Again, Mt. Gox was hacked for 800,000 Bitcoin, and the market survived. Again, you could argue it was at a much, much lower market cap, but I believe 1.1 million and some Bitcoin, it is possible. Again, of the, I think, 6 million, 6.5 million Bitcoin that are supposedly quantum vulnerable, most of those are on reused addresses. And those are probably likely still with owners who are alive and kicking, and they can mitigate and migrate. Essentially, we're talking probably about 2 million Bitcoin. And you know, we will have a future where we have post-quantum signatures and people have ample time to move and migrate. And I'm adamantly against freezing and burning. I am not opposed to having this hourglass thing where you only have so many pay-to-pub key spends in a block. But again, let's discuss it. It's worthwhile to have the discussion. And again, like I am thankful for Ian Smith and what's his name, Luke and Jameson Lopp for like BIP 361. They got a lot of flack because people only read the headline, but that is a Bitcoin room proposal discussing potential things. They are not in favor of those, but like it's worthwhile having the discussion, and we should separate who brings those ideas to the forefront from the idea itself. And we can, you know, explore and talk about it for the next 25 years.
At least. It is. I'm of the same opinion and kind of the base case, and then also with regard to the rate limiting hourglass. I think that's the most palatable of the potential options that have been thrown out there in my mind, at least. And yeah, it the nice thing about this conversation is that it is one that is not purely technical. Like, there are technical solutions for how to do this, but the larger question is actually more philosophical or game theoretical, right? And so I think that's a nice thing, because it allows actually a larger group of people to be able to contribute to that conversation in a meaningful way, who may not be, you know, they don't understand how different address types work at a technical, you know,
you're talking core about level. Bitcoin podcasters. Exactly.
Exactly. What I'm saying is there's still room for the humble Bitcoin podcaster to get their two cents in. So, you know, we need the post-quantum podcast now, the post-quantum podcast. That's going to be necessary to get us through this, I think. Man. Okay. So maybe a couple other things I wanted to, I guess, just more broadly get into with you is a state of a kind of like medium of exchange adoption versus store of value adoption. Because we talked about the, obviously, like the pseudification, let's say, of Bitcoin, and very much, especially in the West, especially in the United States of America, the primary kind of, you know, use case for most people has been store of value, right? Now that if you go outside of America, that obviously changes drastically, right? You know, the future is here, but it's not evenly distributed yet. Places where people need to use Bitcoin as a medium of exchange, where they don't have stable banking, they don't have, you know, the US dollar, they use it far more as a medium of exchange. They also use stable coins and many other things. There's also much higher usage of that, obviously, outside of the US. You know, that's where, you know, the global South, right? I'm curious, because I've seen the debate recently about, you know, is just holding Bitcoin using it, or do you have to spend Bitcoin to use it? Where do you fall on this in terms of, you know, I guess I don't like to tell anybody how to use their money in whatever way, like do whatever the fuck you want. That's the whole point of Bitcoin. But I would like to know your perspective on, you know, let me ask it a different way. Does Bitcoin need to be widely used as a medium of exchange, either on layer one or subsequent layers, for it to achieve its true potential? Or is it being a pristine piece of capital, pristine collateral, is that enough?
No, you have to use Bitcoin as money in order for this to work. Not everybody has to do that, and saving is a valid monetary use case. And like, if you just hodl it, that is perfectly fine. And if you hodl it and proclaim that you will never, ever, ever spend it, that is also fine. I think that is retarded, but that is fine. That is your right. But in order for miners to make a living, you have to have a transaction, and you have to eventually, you know, pay a fee. And Bitcoin was not intended as a peer-to-peer digital rock, but cash. So I always encourage people to spend and replace. I understand that law-abiding people have a problem with that due to taxation. In Germany just now, there has been, because accidentally it was very easy in Germany to spend your Bitcoin, because if you held it for longer than 1 year, there was no capital gains tax. It was like entirely by accident, because they classified it similar to gold. It's one of those, Germany still uses fax machines. Wow. And had very, you know, idiotic internet laws. But that they actually got right. However, now the Greens proposed a new amendment to have capital gains after forever, similar as they have as they changed in Austria, because there's a crypto accounting company that lobbied and made some phenomenal moon math and told them, hey, if you change the law like that, you will have billions upon billions of taxable surplus next year, which never materialized. But they are trying to run the same scam again now, and it's being discussed in Germany. Long tangent there, but I myself, again, use Bitcoin literally daily in my company privately. We send and pay and receive Bitcoin. And it brings me so much joy, and it doesn't get old if I pay a distributor in Australia or an influencer in Canada or something globally. That is the whole reason for me as a businessman to use Bitcoin. Of course, I also do save in Bitcoin, because it is the best store of value. And with, again, advanced miniscript, also inheritance is a perfectly good use case. Therefore, I believe it is perfectly fine to also store output descriptors data on the blockchain, which is also another controversial subject. But yeah, so your question was, is hodling using? Yes, it is, but it should not be the only one. And it is perfectly fine if you're thinking in the history of something becoming a money, you always start out with a store of value, and then it becomes a medium of exchange, then a unit of account. And these things, they're overlapping, and they don't occur globally at the same time. And some of us have to use this technology now to build the tools so that we are ready once it becomes more broadly adopted, or when the government is putting the thumb screws tighter, that we are not caught unprepared. And it's great to see, in the global south, just today I saw that in Kenya, they Tando released that 40 million Kenyans now have essentially an LN URL. It's just your phone number at bitcoin.co.ke. In South Africa, they have 800,000 merchants that do not know that they accept Bitcoin through Money Badger, similar to the Square terminals in the US. And that is huge. So I want to see as much adoption of Bitcoin as money. And again, that's why I also want to see these certain soft fork proposals happen, so that not people are reliant on custodial solutions.
Yeah, I saw the Tando thing, which was fantastic. And on the Square piece as well, I think that was genuinely one of the most just bullish developments that has happened, at least since I've been in Bitcoin. What an 4 million plus merchants, and first it was Optin, but now they're just using Bitcoin as the rails by which you move either, you know, fiat value. The amazing thing about Square is they have both sides of the counter, right? They have Cash App on the customer side, and they have Square terminals on the merchant side, and they've got a lot of customers. And just that alone, turning that ability on and using Bitcoin in such a way that it's not necessarily evident to the user, unless they are actively trying to use it, but it's not necessarily evident. They're just getting, you know, lower fees, a better experience, all of these things. They're getting an improved experience without even realizing they're using Bitcoin. And I think that's a really, really powerful thing. And like, shout out to Jack and Miles and you know, the whole teams over there at Square and Cash App, because that to me was one of the most bullish things I have seen in all of my time in Bitcoin. And again, because I do think the medium of exchange side is so important. I agree with you 100%. Holding Bitcoin, just saving in Bitcoin, that is using it as well. Absolutely. It's just an earlier part of your progression along, as you said, from store of value, medium of exchange, unit of account. Like, this is naturally. And again, you know, the future of Bitcoin is here. It's just not evenly distributed yet. But I agree also that spending Bitcoin is just fun. Like, you can spend and replace. Not that I ever would, nor that I would ever, you know, like, there's another cool thing that somebody could do, which I would never advocate for. I would never do it myself as well. But you could just engage in commerce with somebody via Bitcoin and not tell anyone else about it. Of course, you should.
Is that possible as a podcaster to pay somebody in Bitcoin and not have videographic evidence of that?
I wouldn't know, because again, I actually don't have any Bitcoin at all because of the unfortunate boating accident. I'm such a, you know, bad driver of a boat.
Just to
bang, you know. But you could just do that. You could just engage in commerce between two people, just like handing cash back and forth. And because cash is great. Like, fiat sucks. Cash is fantastic. Cash is so very private. It is wonderful, right?
Yeah.
You can do that with Bitcoin.
Cash would be like a newly invented thing, they would not invent or like allow it to happen. Like, it is too good. Like, it could not be done again. Without historic precedent, they would say, no, let's not have that.
Christine Lagarde would be out there being like, I think not, you know. Like, it is, but this is where we're going also. I don't want to say they, but I'll just say they. Generally, whether they're in Europe, whether they're in America, whether they're in China, they don't want you to use cash. They want to get rid of cash. They want to implement complete surveillance coins. They want to implement central bank digital currencies. But because that's the cash is like this within the fiat system, it's the last vestige of private transaction that you have. There's nothing else. Anything you send through the banking system, there's no way, you know, you can't custody fiat digitally. It's not possible, right? It necessarily needs a custodian. You can custody fiat in cash. Granted, it's still a promise of a central bank, right? So, you know, do you actually own it? Do you own anything? Whatever. But the point being, it's like cash is still something that you can use outside, even though it's using fiat still outside of the surveillance panopticon. That is really powerful. And that's also why they need to get rid of cash so that, you know, they can... And this is where what you see happening too. I think this all goes in tandem with all the age verification stuff online, all of the language about how dangerous VPNs are. You need to be ID'd before you get into any sort of social media. It's to protect the kids, Chris. It's to protect the kids.
Yes. Somebody think of the kids.
Somebody please think of the kids. It's either how'd you like it wrapped, counterterrorism or protect the children. But all of that dovetails together, and you enter into this. You very easily get to the place where you see, oh, crackdown on access to physical cash, or just get rid of it entirely. Make any interactions that you have in the internet traceable back to you and your real identity. No longer allow pseudonymity or anonymity because everything's been ID'd. Perhaps not even at the application layer, but at the ISP level. That's going to be the next step, right? Get rid of VPNs. Make the punishment for VPNs incredibly, incredibly harsh. All these things to remove any vestige of privacy that you have left. And it's one of those things, once you start going down that very, very dark black-pilled rabbit hole, you just say, oh my God, thank God for Bitcoin. Like, I'm so, you know, like, Bitcoin doesn't solve all of that. You need a lot of other freedom tech tools to do that, to protect yourself, to still move along that spectrum of sovereignty. But at least there are those tools. And that's why, to your earlier point, go and thank a developer or zap a developer on Nostr, or, you know, donate to them somehow. Like, it makes a difference, and you want these people to keep developing open source freedom tech, because many of us need it already, and certainly all of us will need it before too long. But a lot of people just don't give a shit is the other thing. They're just like, oh, I got nothing to hide. You know, it's cool by me, bro. Yeah. I don't know. There wasn't even a question there, Chris. That was just me ranting on this, because it's like, I'm like a Charlie Day, you know, in It's Always Sunny, like looking at all these things come together. I'm like, don't you fucking see it, guys? Like, why aren't you paying attention to this? But the sad thing is most people don't care. And perhaps my question would be, what does it take for the majority of people to actually give a shit about freedom money and freedom tech and privacy tech? Or will the majority just never do it? And it's giving a shit about these things is a Fibonacci distribution or round it to a Pareto distribution. Like, and it's just most people never will. And that's okay. I don't know.
Yeah. So that is my bearish case. Most people will never, and there will always be some form of fiat. Like the glorified hyper-Bitcoinization will look like that there is 20%, or let's have it 21% of people who no longer will be willing to share their goods and or services for anything but Bitcoin. And then like they will use it to the fullest extent and they will reap the benefits of that. And again, it's a free and public monetary system anybody can join. But the rest, they like the convenience of a CBDC and they like the promises of, you know, oh, I first have to, you know, scan my ID before I can post this tweet. And that is probably okay. I wish it weren't so, but like history and everything that I have observed everywhere I've been, there's always like 20-80% that is like usually the distribution of producers and consumers or people that are like woke and awaken. Like I would not believe if people tell me like, oh, I just came from my time machine and it's the year 2040 and everybody's using Bitcoin and everything is fine and there's no more wars and we are multiplanetary. Would be great. But maybe that's the German in me. Like I'm a little pessimistic on that. If you don't have any expectations, like you cannot be disappointed. Therefore, you know, I'm will be gladly, you know, shown an opposing view in the future. But if 20% use Bitcoin, that will be a huge win.
Yeah, happiness is reality minus expectations, right? So it's a simple formula. I want to be conscious of your time here. So maybe just a little speed round suggested by our friends at the very storied publication, the Bitcoin Bugle. They wanted me to posit some questions about should plebs be allowed to do certain things? So we'll just go down a list of a couple of them here and I'll just get you just give me a yes or no. Should they be allowed to? Yes. Should they not be allowed to? No. So should plebs, the first one is obvious, be allowed to have sex?
If it is consensual, sure.
Okay. I agree. Should plebs be allowed to start podcasts?
I mean, can we have enough? Yes. Yes, we can. That's a tough one. Like, at one point, we do have enough, but we do not have enough good ones. So maybe, you know, like even a blind chicken finds, you know. So I would say yes, like just like monkeys on a typewriter. Eventually, its greatness will arise. Yeah. So yeah.
The interesting thing about that one, though, is as soon as you start, you may be a pleb, but as soon as you start a podcast, you become a compromised simfluencer. So it's like, can a pleb even start a podcast? Because at the moment of starting, it's like when you observe the photons.
You got me there, traveling the paradox on, yes. As soon as you start a podcast, you ascend, you become a better person, you become a podcaster. Yeah, all right.
Or a courtard simfluencer, you know, yes. Whatever it may be. Obviously. But so you, like, you can't exist in both states. You know, like it's a tricky one. It's actually a quantum problem, which I hope that we'll crack with once we get some more compute.
The pleb paradox, yes.
Yeah. Should plebs be allowed to control the thermostat?
So a friend of mine is an HVAC engineer and like he has installed hundreds of like HVAC systems in like large office spaces. And usually he gets calls back that people complain, or like, we need to change this, we need to change that. And he has taken to installing thermostats that appear to be connected to the system, but they're not. And then the complaints stop. So if you give monkeys the choice to change the temperature, like it's not automatically regulated, but wow. You have like a knob, like suddenly everybody is happy. So
that's actually a fascinating social experiment. That's pretty amazing.
All these kind of things, like, oh, people were complaining about the closed door button on elevators, or people were complaining about the duration waiting for an elevator, and just putting a mirror there, like, all the complaints went away. So if you give people the illusion of a choice or like a distraction, you know, so yes, they should be allowed to twiddle all the knobs.
Yeah, okay, I like it. We didn't even get a chance to talk about Bitcoin knobs, but maybe another time. Okay, should pubs be allowed to ride motorcycles?
Huh. I do not know the memetic background behind that question.
Me neither, but the Bugle guys made me ask. They're like, this one's really important.
It is such an esteemed publication, so there must be some deeper meaning to that. So I myself, I'm too comically tall to like ride a motorbike. Like all the coolness that like a cafe racer would like give a regular person like goes out the window when they see my frog legs like to the left and to the right. Like you would like in any like curvature, like I needed like, I don't know, assistive wheels on my knees. Like it entirely depends on your stature, I would say. So.
I kind of want to see you ride a motorcycle, though. You know.
So, okay, shout out to the Bitcoin Racing team in the UK. We were sponsoring the mini races there. Shout out to Chris McKenzie. I will personally fly over on the island, and I will try to fit myself into a racing mini car. So you will see how my knees protrude from the windows.
The memes are going to be glorious from that. I can already imagine them. And then last one, should plebs be allowed to vote?
So that's, I think, another trick question. Like, what is voting and does it change anything? So you can vote with your wallet. That is the only vote that I believe has proven to work. Therefore, yes, you're allowed to vote with your wallet.
I like that. It's that. What's that old expression? It's like, if voting made a difference, they wouldn't let you do it. But we were positing before this. This is the last thing I'll say, and then I'll let you free from this hostage situation. But that perhaps the fall of Rome was actually because they allowed the plebs to vote. And I think we've got a thesis that we're cooking on this. There's going to be probably a long, 12 part essay series on this. Maybe a venture capital fund started on the back of this additionally. So there's a lot of things in the work there, but that's a question I think that everybody should ponder is, did plebs cause the fall of Rome by voting?
Yeah.
I think we have to end it with that.
There's historic precedent. Look further into that. The plebeian council directly led to the fall of Rome. So ponder on that.
This is my new rabbit hole now, right after this, screw Bitcoin podcasting. It's because I'm going to be a plebeian truther now about the fall of Rome. Chris, this was a great time talking with you. Appreciate you sharing your time with us very much. Where would you like to send people either to get your industrial grade washers or to not get kidnapped and have fingers cut off, whatever it might be, send them your way.
Yeah. Check out Cedor, check out Bitsurance. Follow me on Nostr or on Twitter. You will probably put the links down there. And yeah, if you see me at the conference, get mugged, take a picture and put it to the long list of people
I was loving the updates that you had from Vegas. Just I loved all the green line tests as well. Just really, really nice work. I was living vicariously from afar. It was excellent.
And I will mod you. Will you be coming to BTC Prague?
No more conferences for me. I need to stay close to home, to the pregnant wife.
So, again, if people want to come and meet and talk to me, next I will be at BTC Plus in Vienna, and afterwards in Prague, June 11th or something. Yeah, see you there.
Love it. Well, Chris, appreciate everybody on Nostr as well. Thank you. We did actually, we had more than 10 people joining on Nostr, Chris. So that's fantastic.
New record. He told me that's the highest that's ever been. Wow.
it's true. And thank you guys for the zaps. I appreciate every sat. Thank you for spending Bitcoin. It means a lot, genuinely. So appreciate you guys. Appreciate you, Chris. And we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
All right. And that's a wrap on this Bitcoin Talk episode of the Bitcoin Podcast. Remember to subscribe to this podcast wherever you're watching or listening, and share it with your friends, family, and strangers on the internet. Find me on Noster at primal.net/walker and this podcast at primal.net/titcoin. On X, YouTube, and Rumble, just search at Walker America. And find this podcast on X and Instagram at Titcoin Podcast. Head to the show notes to grab sponsor links. Head to substack.com/@WalkerAmerica to get episodes emailed to you. And head to bitcoinpodcast.net for everything else. Bitcoin is scarce, but podcasts are abundant. So thank you for spending your scarce time listening to the Bitcoin Podcast. Until next time, stay free.